Jnanasamirandasya Janajana Salakaya Saksu Samilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupakadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam Vansikapaturubhyascha Kripasindubhaivacha Patitanam Pabhanebhyo Vaishnavibhyo Namo Namaha. The soul has passed through his life within a particular body, trying his best to become satisfied, to become happy. And then, despite the ultimate inability of one to be happy within this world, building relationships, gathering wealth, fame, and fortune, despite one's desire for these things and how elusive they are, one dies filled with desires. And then, according to the activities that he's performed in his life, and the chapter we just completed yesterday of the Bhagavatam speaks very much to the point of someone who has maintained his family somehow or another, by hook or by crook, with all kinds of devious ways, feeling very proud of himself for doing so, and committing so many sinful activities. And after his demise, he is punished in so many ways for what he has done. He goes to hell, anda tamisra. He is ripped apart, eats his flesh, this, that, bitten by dogs, scorpions, poisonous creatures. And in so many ways he suffers. Not very pleasant. And his subtle body, his mind, which Adhishtayam Manasayam Vishyapasevate, which he which determines his next body, is in that way trained, his next gross body. His mind is in that way is trained to be able to tolerate the sufferings that he's going to have to endure in his next birth, which is an animal birth, because practically speaking he's cultivated animal desires, because human life is especially meant for one desire, and that one desire that should be cultivated, or the possibility that distinguishes us from animals due to higher intelligence, higher consciousness, more developed consciousness, is the ability to question our existence and to actually find answers, to understand the nature of our existence, that it's basically suffering, and to understand that the material world means suffering, and to understand that actually speaking we are not our body, we are different from the body, we are eternal, we are souls. By cultivating good consciousness, one can understand this. Consciousness means goodness, actually. Because when we're contaminated by passion, ignorance, we are not aware. Our consciousness is not clear. It is fogged and covered by ignorance, by the cobwebs of ignorance, and by the desires of passion. And it's such a relief when actually the way that the modes of material nature work is that they're always, no one of them is forever dominant within any person, whether we be a great and powerful warrior or a businessman or a scholar or a worker or anything. There's not one of the modes that is completely dominant. Of course, one may be prevalent, But there is always a fighting for supremacy amongst these modes. So even a person who is very much in the mode of goodness will have his spells in ignorance. And even someone who is in ignorance, from time to time, will experience goodness. And when we do experience some goodness, when our consciousness is clear, what a relief it is. What a relief it is. That's actually what human beings are meant to cultivate. At least consciousness in the mode of goodness, because in that, in the mode of goodness, sattvat sanjayate jnanam, knowledge is born. Because naturally one isn't so attached to material things. And one actually, with even a tiny bit of guidance, can understand his spiritual nature. So, after, so when the consciousness of the living entity become before his next birth, after leaving and being punished, he's preparing himself for the for an animal birth, and then he takes animal birth and works off the karma that he has accumulated in that life. So it may take hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of births. Just imagine that, for if we take part in the slaughtering of a cow, and so many people, the person who the herdsmen, the people who transport the cows, the people who cook the cows, who kill the cow, who cook the cow, and then who finally eat it. There are eight, in this way, there are eight different people who partake of the karma when one cow is killed. And for one cow's being killed, one takes a horrible birth for as many hares. One goes to a hellish place and suffers for each of every hair on the body of a cow. Now there's quite a few of them too. So for say 15 or 20 minutes or a half hour of one day in one life, one may accumulate enough karma for thousands and thousands and thousands of births. We kill this haphazardly, we do that, we cheat, we exploit, commit this sin for our pleasure, do that thing. And this way, after the end of 100 years or 80 years or 70 years, we may have millions and millions of years of karma to repay, which forces us into so many animal bodies. We can just imagine what the consciousness of a worm is. All he knows is the dark depths of his hole and to eat earth. Just imagine what consciousness is. We can't even imagine. So covered. So one after another, so many species of life, fish. Just imagine what a plant is like. You can't perceive anything practically. All you know is sunlight that you go towards and sucking up water through your roots. What else is there for an animal, for a plant, and fish? And then there's the mammals and insects. And insects, even the difference between a mosquito and a fly in the consciousness is so vast. Flies are so developed in consciousness compared to a mosquito. Flies are individuals, they have personalities. There's some that are very angry, watch out for those angry flies too. They're heavy. Well, sometimes they're in your room and they buzz you, come real close and bother you like that. And there are others, leave you alone. They're individuals, they're personalities. At least the ones in my room are. A mosquito, on the other hand, all he knows is one thing, blood. He doesn't know if he's inside, he's outside. Doesn't know anything except he can perceive blood from a distance, warm-blooded, and he comes in and just sticks there's a technical name for it. Yes, it's his proboscis. Quite properly so. Inserts his proboscis within your skin pores. And then the bodies of these creatures are so scientifically arranged that then, because the blood coagulates so quickly that the mosquito can't even get a meal. So at the same time as they put their proboscis in the pores, they insert some type of anticoagulant that stops the blood from coagulating, so they can properly suck it from your body. And this is what causes the itching, etc. So, so many different species of life. Some know only blood, some know darkness, some only, their whole consciousness is to hunt and kill, cats and things like that, and crickets, who knows what their consciousness is like. This, or the cicadas sit up in trees and just make noise all night long. Some people have neighbors like that too. So there's so many different species of life that one has to circulate through. This is called samsara. And then, when one's karma runs out, it's more by the grace of the super soul, when he decides, all right, you can take a human body now. Then it is such an opportunity, after having lived and wasted one's life, and then having to, for thousands and millions of years, worked off the debt of karma, the bad debts that we have accumulated in one life. And then, that's where the next chapter begins. So there was the suffering in one's life, and then there's the suffering after one's life, and one's death, and the subtle body, and then there's all the different births. And then, the living entity takes his birth in a human body. He can take it in a human body. So the first verse in this chapter, Kamana Daivana Nitrena, this is a very famous verse that Prabhupada was very fond of quoting. Kamana Daivana Nitrena, according to our karma, according to how we've acted in previous lives, and Daiva Nitrena, under the supervision, Nitrena means the eyes, Nitra means eyes. So Daiva Nitrena, under the divine, the supervision of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, according to his karma, and according to the supervision of the Lord, Jantu, the living entity, Deha Upapatehe, he obtains a body, a human body, or anybody actually. So the verse says, Striya Pravishta Udaram Pumso Reta Kanasraya. Under the supervision, so Kapila Muni is continuing to speak, under the supervision of the Supreme Lord, and according to the result of his work, ultimately it's the Lord, but it's done, he works according to the result of our activities. So according to the Lord and our karma, the living entity, the soul, is made to enter into the womb of a woman through the particle of male semen to assume a particular type of body. Now, because these purports are very nice and powerful and informative, but we won't have time to read them right now because we want to read the prayers that will come too soon of that living entity. Because they're very instructive for us. What is he going to pray after being through all that? What is he going to desire? So on the first night, the sperm and the ovum mix. And on the fifth night, the mixture ferments like a bubble. On the tenth night, it develops into a form like a plum. And after that, it gradually turns into a lump of flesh or an egg, as the case may be. In the course of a month, a head is formed. Of course, it depends on what type of body it is, but this is specifically talking about a human body. But a similar process, there are different processes for the birth of a living entity, but this is discussing the human one. In the course of a month, a head is formed, and at the end of 2 months, the hands, feet, and other limbs take shape. By the end of 3 months, the nails, fingers, toes, body hair, bones, and skin appear, as do the organ of generation and other apertures in the body, namely the eyes, nostrils, ears, mouth, and anus. Within 4 months from the date of conception, the 7 essential ingredients of the body, namely does anyone know what chyle is? Not child. Everyone knows what a child is. This is the inner child. The child after the food is more or less digested in the stomach, there's something after partially digested food in the stomach is called chyme. And the chyle comes from the chyme. It is ingested somewhat, some fatty emulsification or something. It's something that is ingested into the blood. So these are the essential ingredients of the body. After 4 months, they're all there. The chyle, the blood, the flesh, fat, bone, marrow, and semen. They come into existence. At the end of 5 months, hunger and thirst make themselves felt. And at the end of 6 months, the fetus, enclosed by the amnion, which is the membrane, the final membrane that surrounds the embryo in the womb, and there's a fluid called the amnion fluid or something like that within that. Huh? Yeah. Yes, that's what you're quite the scientist. Yeah? Biology class. Okay. So the fetus, enclosed by the amniotic fluid surrounded by the amnion, that membrane, begins to move on the right side of the abdomen. Deriving its nutrition from the food and drink taken by the mother, the fetus grows and remains in that abominable residence. It's also the abdominal residence, both, surrounded by stools and urine, which is the breeding place of all kinds of worms. And therefore the child, his body is so sensitive and the worms are biting him, and if the mother doesn't eat properly or she's in anxiety, all this is transferred to the child. And the child again, in the womb too, has to suffer. So he's just come from the suffering of a thousand births as worms and toads and amoebas and falcons and tigers, etc., and crickets and birds, and he's going through thousands of those births. And before that, he was suffering in the court of Yamaraj. And before that, he was suffering in his life. And now he's in the womb, and again suffering. So bitten again and again all over the body by the hungry worms in the abdomen itself, the child suffers terrible agony because of his tenderness. He thus becomes unconscious moment after moment because of the terrible condition. Owing to the mother's eating bitter, pungent foodstuffs or food which is too salty or too sour, the body of the child is incessantly suffers pains which are almost intolerable. Placed within the amnion and covered outside by the intestines, the child remains lying on one side of the abdomen, his head turned towards his belly and his back and neck arched like a bull. The child thus remains like a bird in a cage, trapped, without freedom of movement. At that time, if the child is fortunate, he can remember all the troubles of his past 100 births. So not all children, but one who is very fortunate by the grace of Krishna, and the fortunate ones who can remember like this, by God's grace, they pray. And by virtue of those prayers, Krishna shows them mercy. So he can remember all the troubles of his past 100 births. And he grieves wretchedly. What is the possibility of peace of mind in that condition? So we'll read Prabhupada's purport to this. Because in this, it really describes what the purport. Purport means that which is being communicated, the actual points that are being communicated. So this is what we are supposed to really pick up and understand through hearing about all this suffering, and then finally in the womb, and then just about to begin our human life. So that's the point, that just about to begin the human life after having suffered so much, what has been learned Because by experience, we're supposed to learn, reach conclusions, learn from our experience. So what, after all this suffering, has this soul perceived and learned? So Prabhupada will explain in his purport, give us some advice. Because we have been in that position, and if we are not careful, we will again be in that position. So what should we have learned so we can apply it to our lives now? Srila Prabhupada's purport. After birth, the child may forget about the difficulties of his past lives. But when we are grown up, we can at least understand the grievous tortures undergone at birth and death by reading the authorized scriptures like Srimad Bhagavatam. If we do not believe in the scriptures, that is a different question. But if we have faith in the authority of such descriptions, then we must prepare for our freedom in the next life. That is possible in this human form of life. So human life is an opportunity. One who does not take heed of these indications of suffering in human existence is said to be undoubtedly committing suicide. It is said that this human form of life is the only means for crossing over the nescience of Maya or material existence. We have a very efficient boat in this human form of body, and there is a very expert captain, the spiritual master. The scriptural injunctions are like favorable winds. If we do not cross over the ocean of the nescience of material existence in spite of all these facilities, then certainly we are intentionally committing suicide. So we should take opportunity of the consciousness that we have to get out, to cross the ocean of ignorance of material life and sail home, back to Godhead. So the child in the womb, Prabhupada continues to describe it, or Kapila Muni continues to describe. Thus endowed with the development of consciousness from the seventh month after his conception, the child is tossed downward by the airs that press the embryo during the weeks preceding delivery. Like the worms born of the same filthy abdominal cavity, he cannot remain in one place. He's always moving at that time. The living entity is always kicking. The living entity in this frightful condition of life, bound by seven layers of material ingredients, he prays with folded hands, appealing to the Lord who has put him in that condition. So he begins to lament because he's aware. He's aware of what he's gone through. He may forget. That means that we may forget what we've gone through, but we can learn from the Shastra to what we have gone through and then take advantage. And what does he do to this consciousness? He's lamenting, what have I done? What have I been through? I don't want to have to go through this again. Oh, I don't want to have to go through this again. So from verses 12 to 21, 10 verses that describe these prayers of the living entity. We'll read some of the purports as well. And I'll try to give an overview of his thought, of how he's thinking, just by having studied in advance the verses. You know, how it flows and what are we supposed to gain from this. So the first prayer, the human soul, the soul within the human body says, I take shelter of the lotus feet of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who appears in his various eternal forms and walks on the surface of the world. I take shelter of him only because he can give me relief from all fear, and from him I've received this condition of life, which is just befitting my impious activities. So he's praying that I'm in this difficult situation due to things I've done. And I'm afraid of more suffering. because I've been suffering for so long and so continuously. It's like that example that Prabhupada, we heard in Prabhupada's purport, with that, what happiness is compared is the few breaths that we get before being dunked again into the water where we can't breathe. So when we're up, we could be thinking, oh, how wonderful life is. But knowing that soon, ever so quickly, we're going to be immersed into the torture of not being able to breathe again beneath the water. That up just gives an opportunity for fearing. So this child, this embryo, is fearing, am I going to have to go through this all again? So he offers his obeisances, taking shelter of the Supreme Lord who comes to this world to give mercy. Yada yada hi dhammasya, glaniya bhavati bharata, bhutta nama dhammasya, tadatmanam sri jamyam. Paritranaya sadhunam vinasaya chataskritam. So he comes and to give mercy. So therefore, if he's merciful, let me take shelter of him. That is the prayer. Not complaining, oh, why is he doing this to me? Even though it is by his sanction that it is happening. But yet, this is just befitting my impious activities, he says. So the living entity here takes shelter of the Lord to get free of this fear, the fear of what is going to happen in this life, in what happens after life, and within our next bodies, and then within wombs. Afraid of that, intelligently he takes shelter of the Lord. Next verse. I, the pure soul, appearing now bound by my activities, am lying in the womb of my mother by the arrangement of Maya, under the sanction of Krishna. This is the karmano daiva naitrena. Because of my karma, under the laws of material nature, and ultimately under the supervision of Krishna, we are bound by our activities, bound by this body. I am lying in the womb of my mother, bound by the arrangement of Maya. I offer my respectful obeisances unto him who is also here with me. Krishna is in this world and he's within everyone's heart. Ishvara Sarvabhutanam Riddhase Arjuna Tishtati is in everyone's heart, everyone. Sarvasya Chaham, every living entity's heart. Riddhe Sanavisto. So he's offering obeisance. He's bound, he's saying. I'm bound by my activities. Not only we are bound by our karma, we are bound by our bodies, and he is bound in the womb. He cannot move even. Actually, we're only bound. So he is here with me, but he is different. He is unaffected and changeless. He is unlimited, but he is perceived in the repentant heart. That's interesting. In the repentant heart, he is perceived, even though he is unlimited. So that gives us a hint of what we have to do to actually know Krishna. Be very humble and repentant, contrition, contrite. So to him I offer my respectful obeisances. So here, so after taking shelter of the Lord due to fear, he says, I am bound and different from the Lord who is within my heart right next to me. But he is free and I am bound. So there's a vast difference between us. Prabhupada explains in the purport. It is said here, Atapyamana Riddaye Vashishtam. He is in the heart of every living entity. But he can be realized only by a soul who is repentant. The individual soul becomes repentant that he forgot his constitutional position, wanted to become one with the Supreme Soul, and tried his best to lord it over material nature. He has been baffled, and therefore he is repentant. At that time, supersoul, or the relationship between the supersoul and the individual soul, is realized. When through that repentance, that humility, understanding our mistake, the core mistake. So that will allow one to realize the supersoul. As it is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, after many, many births, the knowledge comes to the conditioned soul that Vasudeva is great. He is master and he is Lord. That we can never lord it over material nature. So this is just what Kapila Dev, in a philosophical way, was explaining to Devahuti Ma before. This enjoying spirit. We have to be repentant about that. The individual soul is a servant and takes shelter of the Lord, and therefore he surrenders unto the Lord. At that time, just by doing that, he becomes a Mahatma, a great soul. Therefore, a fortunate living being who comes to this understanding, even within the womb of his mother, has his liberation assured. So he's fearful, he understands that he is tiny, insignificant, trapped, and the Lord is nearby but free. Text 14. So what separates them? What keeps them separate? Us from the Lord. 14. I am separated from the Supreme Lord because of my being in this material body, which is made of the five elements, and therefore my qualities and senses are being misused, although I am essentially spiritual. Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead is transcendental to material nature and the living entities, because he is devoid of such a material body, and because he is always glorious in his spiritual qualities, I offer my obeisances unto him. So I am trapped, I am bound. The most basic thing that binds us is our very body. And in the subtle body, the thing that binds us most and traps us is the false ego. And then everything is built upon that. But the Lord, he is devoid of such a material body. He never has a material body. He is eternally, forever free, unbound, and he's always glorious with his spiritual qualities. So the living entity is not going to talk much about the spiritual qualities of the Lord and glorify the Krishna in that way. Because at this point, he is just seeing his own position and trying to do what is required for him. To understand his actual position, that is knowledge. To understand actually who we are and who we are not. We are not Lord, we are just tiny, insignificant souls. So he's offering obeisances. So far in every prayer, he has offered his obeisances to the Lord. So we have material bodies which are meant for our attempt for enjoyment, and the Lord has no material body. He's free of that being bound by a body. Text 15. The human soul further prays. The living entity is put under the influence of material nature and continues a hard struggle for existence on the path of repeated birth and death. The conditioned life, this conditioned life, is due to his forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So previously, we've heard he's fearful, he's afraid of the sufferings of material life, and he understands that he is different from Krishna. And then the Lord is free and he is bound. So how can he become free? As the Lord is free, free of the body, free of all the sufferings, free of the binding of material nature. So first, what is the cause of this? This conditional life is due to his forgetfulness of his relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is the cause. That we want to be independent and joyous, and we're forgetful of our actual relationship with him. So therefore, without the Lord's mercy, how can he again engage in the transcendental loving service of the Lord? So he wants mercy to remove this forgetfulness, this tendency to want to be the Lord. So forgetfulness and mercy. So this is the cause of the binding and the The cause of the freedom is given here as well. The cause of the binding, our being bound and trapped, is our forgetfulness of Krishna, especially our relationship with Him. And the cause of our freedom is mercy. The cause of getting out of our bound state is mercy. Now, what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over the other verses through up to 15 here, and then we'll read purports. So how do we go from this bound state of forgetfulness to this free state because of the mercy of the Lord? What do we do? Because mercy is such that it can't be demanded. You can't walk into someone and say, you must be merciful to me, because mercy means it's an exercise of someone's freedom. We can't demand mercy. We can humbly request mercy, but we can't demand it. But what can we do? What can we do? What is within our power? No one other than the Supreme Personality of Godhead, as the localized Paramatma, the partial representation of the Lord, is directing all inanimate and animate objects. He is present in the three phases of time, past, present, and future. So He is the director, and He is always there. In the past, He was there. In the present, He's there. Now, in the future, He will always be there. So at every point, He is there in time and space. And no one else is the Lord in that way. Therefore, the conditioned soul is engaged in different activities by His directions. So He is the one directing the conditioned soul ultimately. And in order to get free from the threefold miseries of this conditional life, so He is the director, we have to surrender unto Him only. So that is what the living entity is meant to do to obtain the mercy of the Lord. That is called Sharanagati. And that surrendered position, and the main anga or part of surrender is Gotripte Varanam Tata, just putting ourselves under Krishna's protection. So He's afraid and He's going to surrender. He's trying to surrender to Krishna, who is the controller of everything, and He's everywhere, going to surrender unto His will as His servant. 17. Fallen. So that's how to get freedom. Fallen into a pool of blood, stool and urine within the abdomen of his mother, his own body scorched by the mother's gastric fire, the embodied soul, anxious to get out, counts his months and prays, "Oh my Lord, when shall I, a wretched soul, be released from this confinement?" So he's taking shelter and begging to get free. So we're not in the womb in one sense, we have so much more freedom, but yet we are similarly trapped by this body, and we have bigger traps around us. Ultimately we're trapped by this, we're completely enclosed within this universe which has thick layers around it. We're in the prison of material nature. So we are in that womb, surrounded by so many difficult, trying, testing circumstances. And everyone is so wounded by these things, actually. But this soul knows what to do. He says, "Please rescue me from this. My dear Lord, by your causeless mercy, I am awakened to consciousness." So this is a great gift that he's aware of. By your mercy, I'm awake and I understand my position. Most living entities don't understand their position, how difficult it is. And they're just going on and on and on like animals with no awareness of who they are in relationship to the material energy, but he's thanking the Lord that he has, by his causeless mercy, I'm awakened to consciousness, although I am only 10 months old. For this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the friend of all fallen souls, there is no way to express my gratitude but to pray with folded hands. This is actually wonderful, because in the midst of such a difficult circumstance, he's suffering in so many ways. The soul is suffering in so many ways. His body is tender, being bitten, horrible things around him, burnt, gastric fires, this and that. But he's seeing what Krishna has given him. He's not complaining about his circumstance, but he's thankful for the consciousness of awareness. And with gratitude, even in the most difficult circumstance, one can actually be happy. And without gratitude, even in the most wonderful circumstance, one will never be happy. One will always see what one's misery, but with gratitude, seeing how merciful Krishna is, then one can actually be happy. So what is he grateful for? Consciousness, to understand his misery. Because animals don't even have that. And most humans, no better than animals, don't have that either. They're not conscious of their misery. They're not conscious that they're going to die. They're illusioned. It's not that they're happy, but they're unconscious. Illusioned. So he's very thankful for consciousness. So everything depends on the attitude. Everything depends on our attitude. Even if we're in a difficult situation, we could be grateful for the awareness of the difficult situation and understand how kind Krishna is, giving us this awareness so that we can, as the soul is praying, take shelter of Krishna and end this problem once and for all and go to him, surrender to him. So how is it? He says, I'm in this horrible situation. How can I express my gratitude? All I can do is pray with folded hands. Thank you. Pray to you. The living entity in another type of body sees only by instinct. He knows only by the agreeable and disagreeable sense perceptions of that particular body. But I have a body in which I can control my senses and I can understand my destination. Therefore, I offer my respectful obeisances to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by whom I have been blessed with this body and by whose grace I can see him within and without. Due to repentance, that contrite heart, he can see Krishna within his heart. He perceives him. And he's thankful that he has an opportunity, a human life, by which he can see him, perceive him, and offer obeisances to him, and thereby get out. I can control my senses, understand my destination, opportunity to do these things and offer obeisances and get out. A blessing, human life is a blessing. And the consciousness to be aware of that is a blessing. It's only in human life that we can do something other than animal life and get out. That is the gift. It awards that consciousness, even though there is so much suffering, and sometimes it appears that there is more suffering, the more conscious you are, the more aware you are, humans even as opposed to animals, there's more suffering. So that, this soul is expressing his gratitude for that because it's a great gift. So he won't again fall into the trap of just trying to exploit and enjoy. Therefore, my Lord, text 20, although I am living in a terrible condition, I do not wish to depart from my mother's abdomen to fall again into the blind well of materialistic life. That is what he's afraid of. Your external energy, called Deva Maya, at once captures the newly born child. And immediately, false identification, which is the beginning of the cycle of continual birth and death, begins. I don't want to depart, I don't want to leave the womb, because what I'm afraid of is falling again into Maya, and now I'm conscious. Even though I'm suffering so much, I'd rather suffer and be conscious of it, and thereby take shelter of you, than spend all my time, like everyone else in the world, trying to remove the suffering, and thereby falling into illusion and forgetting everything. This is incredible instruction, incredible consciousness. Better to be in a miserable condition and aware of it than to be making those attempts to get out and using one's whole life. And that's what everyone is doing. Using one's whole valuable energy trying to get pleasure and remove suffering instead of being aware and conscious of what life is really meant for, consciousness is meant for. Therefore, the conclusion, without being agitated anymore by what? Agitated anymore by what? By the suffering. He just tolerates it. So who ultimately has the responsibility to take us back to Godhead? Sometimes we think that the spiritual master has that responsibility, and sometimes Prabhupada would even speak like that, but here it explains it from a different perspective, that we have the responsibility to go back to Godhead. The weight of responsibility is upon us to act properly and to do the right thing, and that surrender, accepting everything favorable, rejecting that which is unfavorable, acting properly, taking responsibility for ourselves, not being agitated by the externals, the sufferings and the pleasures. I shall deliver myself from the darkness of nescience with the help of my friend. And what is my friend? Clear consciousness, awareness. Awareness of what? What is he being aware of mostly? His suffering. Which has happened, why? Sanctioned by Krishna, yes, but due to his previous impious activities, he's aware of it. He doesn't want above. No one likes suffering. No one likes it. Not this one either. No one likes it, but he's so afraid of entering again into illusion. He prefers the clear conscious awareness of life, material life as it is, than the intoxicating forgetfulness caused by illusion. So by the help of his awareness, his clear consciousness, he's going to make the attempt to deliver himself, depending upon the mercy of Krishna, knowing that only the mercy of Krishna can ultimately do it. So how is he going to do that? Simply by keeping the lotus feet of the Lord Vishnu in my mind. I shall be saved from entering into the wombs of many mothers for repeated birth and death. So those are the prayers of the living entity in the womb. I found them so fascinating. Wonderful instructions. Prabhupada explains in the purport to that final verse, and that's probably... We should read, please read all the purports that Prabhupada has written to these verses. They're very nice. And we'll just have time to read this final one here. And we'll read half of it from the second paragraph on. The child prays that it is better to remain within the womb of darkness and be constantly absorbed in Krishna consciousness than to get out and again fall a victim to the illusory energy. The illusory energy acts within the abdomen as well as outside the abdomen. But the trick is that one should remain Krishna conscious. And then the effect of such a horrible condition cannot act unfavorably upon him. In Bhagavad Gita it is said that one's intelligence is his friend, and the same intelligence can also be his enemy. Here also the same idea is repeated. Suridatmanaiva. friendly intelligence, that my friend, clear consciousness or friendly intelligence, that also comes by Krishna's mercy. Mata smittam jnanam apavanam cha. He gives clear intelligence, friendly intelligence, and forgetfulness too. Absorption of intelligence in the personal service of Krishna and full consciousness of Krishna always are the full consciousness of Krishna always are the path of self-realization and liberation. So that is the process. Without being unnecessarily agitated, if we take to the process of Krishna consciousness by constantly chanting Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, the cycle of birth and death can be stopped for good. It may be questioned herein how the child can be fully Krishna conscious within the womb of the mother without any paraphernalia with which to execute Krishna consciousness. There's no deities in there, there's no arti paraphernalia, there's no books to distribute, there's no books to read, there's no tilak to put on. There's nothing. So without those things, how is it possible for him to be Krishna conscious? It is not necessary, so Prabhupada answers that question, it is not necessary to arrange for paraphernalia to worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu. The child wants to remain within the abdomen of his mother and at the same time wants to become free from the clutches of Maya. One does not need any material arrangement to cultivate Krishna consciousness. One can cultivate Krishna consciousness anywhere and everywhere, provided he can always think of Krishna. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, can be chanted even within the abdomen of one's mother. One can chant while sleeping, while working, while imprisoned in the womb, or while outside. This Krishna consciousness cannot be checked in any circumstance. The conclusion of the child's prayer is, let me remain in this condition. Although it is very miserable, it is better not to fall a victim to Maya again by going outside. My dear child within the womb, thank you very much for your instructions. Any questions or comments? Thank you very much for listening. Oh, I know you're going to ask me a really hard question. Easy one? You promise? Is it going to be tricky or simple? Huh? Okay. I'm trusting you. Okay. And if it's not, I'm going to ask Alan to answer it. He'll fix you. Wow.
He will come.
So you better watch out. Okay, you better. Okay, what's the simple question?
The beginning of this verse, this chapter, is mentioned that the unfortunate souls that they can remember in the womb, the troubles that they have been through for 100 births before. So only those souls, those fortunate ones, is able to pray like this to the Supreme Lord.
Yes.
Or every soul.
Not everyone. Only some fortunate ones. Jiva Goswami has commented on this point. If Krishna allows, in the next class, I'll read some of Jiva Goswami's comments on this. It's not every soul. And the ones who do pray like this, they are released. It is not that after praying like this, Krishna said, sorry, get out now, and then forget everything and go back and do horrible things. No. Thanks, Astra. That was an easy one.
Guruji Prabhu, is it necessary, from what you read in the other part, is it a soul that has already started its spiritual progress that gets a chance.
Must be. Why would Krishna reciprocate with him and make him so fortunate? But of course, Krishna is free to do anything he wants. But yeah, one would think that it's a very fortunate soul. Bhagyuan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasari by Makti Latavij, by the mercy of Krishna and Guru, one becomes fortunate to get this kind of a circumstance. But one has to have acted properly and have so much piety, spiritual piety, to receive, be this fortunate. That's what it would seem. Otherwise Krishna would be saying, okay, you, we're going to make you fortunate, and this one we're not, you're going to have to suffer. As if it's, you know, if he's, you know, a very partial God like that, but that's childish. Krishna's not like that. He's equal.
So by this fact, we
he's a devotee, must be a devotee.
So by this fact, you can also realize that whatever happens to us, say, in our life, is not by chance. Otherwise, there won't be a God. Would that be?
Yeah. Everything happens for a devotee. Everything happens by Krishna's mercy. And if a devotee sees that, then he's free. Just by that one thing alone, he'll be free, liberated. Seeing Krishna's mercy in everything. And then he'll benefit from everything, seeing it like that. He'll only make advancement. But it's not easy. Easier to kick the dog or the cat or something. Different months, lunar months.
Yesterday you said that when a soul is, I might have got it wrong, but what you said when a soul is first undergoing punishment, that the subtle body is tied up.
Covered. To protect it.
Right. So what is actually suffering then? What's feeling the suffering if he hasn't got a body anymore? Is it just beginning suffering?
You don't know that suffering occurs in the mind? Remember? The suffering actually doesn't take place in the physical level, it takes place more in the mental level, much more. Yes?
Yeah. So what is the subtle body then? It's what is tied up then?
Mind, intelligence, false ego. That's the subtle body.
I thought that was protected, you know, you said it was tied.
Covered. I didn't say covered. You said that. Oh, okay. I said covered, because that's what the verse said, covered. And the covered was to protect it, because it's so sensitive. And the kind of pain it's going to have to suffer would kill it, in one sense. So it's protected and covered so it can tolerate it. But it still suffers. What's the title of chapter 13? Yeah.
Which books? Which set of books?
Krishna book, of course.
I think it's Boys in the Forest.
The Boys in the Forest?
Just before Lord Brahma steals all the boys.
Yeah, how about 17?
Swallowing the Forest Fire.
How about 22?
Krishna stealing the clothes of the gopis.
2?
Facing the womb.
Yeah. And 37?
Cruise around and bring down.
See? You should get a prize for that, it's true.
Crazy mind.
Crazy? I wish my mind was crazy and was able to do that. 27. 31.
Songs of gopis.
You had a question?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got a question for you. Okay. Well, I got an answer for you.
We've given quite detailed biological descriptions of the child and
development.
Development, yeah.
Like a plum.
Is that Prabhupada's translation, or is that from the old Sanskrit? Like, did they know about that type of thing thousands of years ago?
It is Prabhupada's translation, but it's translation of the Sanskrit, and this is what the Sanskrit says.
So they have like full knowledge of that.
Yeah. Pretty nifty, huh?
Yeah. Nifty.
Yeah. This is all, Ayurveda is full of this stuff, the seven different layers that cover the body. That's Ayurvedic stuff. I can't remember what they're called though. I used to have a book somewhere that Ayurveda says all kinds of things like that. Okay?
Yeah.
Yes.
The child who plays within the womb, the first man, is it definite for him for his deliverance when he comes out, or there is chance for him also to fall down?
I'll read what Jiva Goswami says on this next time if I can. But after praying so sincerely, Krishna is kind to him. But see, when you say definite doesn't mean that you can't misuse your free will at any time. But yeah, if he's so sincere, Krishna will be so kind to him. Which brings us to the major problem, our lack of sincerity. Okay, so next Wednesday, if Krishna allows, we'll complete this chapter, then go on to chapter 32. And then next week, and then the following week, if Krishna allows, we'll finish the third canto. Next week, and then the following week, if Krishna allows, we'll finish the third canto. And then we'll see if we'll take a little break or we'll go on to four. Four.
Because it begins
as 44.
It's a new language.
Huh?
New language, isn't it?
New language? What's so new about it?
It's new for us anyway.
Okay. But do you know the second book yet?
Not yet, I'm going to do that.
You better do it.
Yeah.
Who was supposed to give you a book?
I got it.
Who gave it to you?
Edward.
Yeah, that was kind of him. Okay, are you working on it?
I will, yes.
I will. Are you working on it?
Mm.
What's the... guess right. What's the first chapter number in the first book, in the second book?
It's 54, that's Kajuna the one, but then it's 55, and that's into a Sandler.
Yeah.
Sandler.
Yeah. So you already know two?
Yeah.
What's 56?
I don't know if that's Bomasura. I read another story in there. That was an excellent.
Yeah. Are you reading the stories too?
Manasura.
Are you reading the stories too?
I'm starting to, yeah.
Starting to, when you, as soon as you get home.
I listen to them all the time. I listen to them all
the time. You have the tapes? By
yeah.
Who?
It's Amala Bhaktidas. He's an old Krishna book, number 2.
You know what? I will have one day, maybe not in the far distant future, I'll have copies of the original dictations that Prabhupada made for that. And you know what? If you want to borrow them or something like that, you can. And if anyone else wants to borrow them, they can also, if they memorize the titles of the... Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. And that living entity in the womb, Ki Jai. Well done.